Good morning, and welcome to the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton, a welcoming Unitarian Universalist congregation. My name is Lisa Martino, and I serve on the worship committee. Our minister, Cynthia Landrum, I can't believe I couldn't get that name out, is not here today. She's at Ferry Beach. So our service today will be led by our special guest, Reverend Daniel Gregg. Everyone is invited to coffee hour in Fellowship Hall after the service. To get there, please exit the church through the door to my left, follow the hallway to the end, go down the stairs, and take the elevator, and follow the arrow to Fellowship Hall. Childcare is available during this service in the nursery. If the need arises any time during the service, please feel free to take your child there where they will be well cared for. The nursery is located in the lower level of our Fellowship Hall, which you get to the same way as the Fellowship Hall, just down one more level. If you're not sure where to go, ask one of the ushers to help guide you. If this is your first time, we are very happy to have you here, and please sign one of our guest books, which are located in the vestibule at the front entrance of the church or at the visitor's table at coffee hour, so we can put you on our mailing list and our newsletter announcements. Are there announcements today? I don't think so. So thank you for your attention. At this point, we invite you to put your cell phones on worship mode and greet your neighbor.
Sound. I invite you to hear these words, our call to worship. Come into this space of sacred memory and remember. Come into this place of faith and restoration and of hope. Come into this sanctuary, a place of peace, and be renewed. Return to love. Return to creativity so that we can go out again into the world in love and to create. Let us now worship together. Our chalice lighter today is Peter Fisk, and while he comes up to light the chalice, I invite you to hear these words of chalice lighting. Life is a gift for which we are grateful. We gather in community to celebrate the glories and the mysteries of this great gift. Now please rise in body or in spirit while we sing hymn number 89, Come My Way, My Truth, My Life, number 89 in the Gray Hymnal.
Such a
While we are standing, we'll recite our covenant and affirmation, beginning with the love. Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Let us hear these words of prayer. Source of all, God of all creation, Spirit of life moving through and among us, we begin by giving thanks for this community that is strong enough and beautiful enough to hear and contain our joys and our sorrows. We give thanks for those people in our lives who add grace and meaning to our living, the people in our lives whose accomplishments we can delight in and whose travels can excite us, the people in our lives whose bravery in the face of adversity, whether it's physical or emotional or with their health, inspires us to continue living and to continue loving. We recognize in this moment of prayer all those who may be mourning, both here in this room and around the world. We lift up those who are now suffering under oppression and violence. We remember those lives lost, lives cut too short because of hatred and enmity. Perhaps even now we can recall the celebration in California cut short by a mad, youthful gunman at the synagogue. Or even remember those who were mowed down in worship in Sri Lanka or in Christchurch or in Pittsburgh or in far too many places in this world to name. May their memories be a blessing to us forever. And may their lives encourage us to continue our work, whether big or small, to make this world a more peaceful and nobler and more just place. We ask that in our own lives, we can continue to be encouraged to extend ourselves in generosity, to extend ourselves in help, to extend ourselves in creativity, to truly be good friends, to be good neighbors, to be more fully human. So for all of these things, we express our thanks, we express our wonder, we express our hope. And we do this now in the shared silence. Please join me in a moment of silence. Amen. Blessed be. Thank you. We will now sing hymn number 123, Spirit of Life. You can rise in body or in spirit, or however you wish to sing. Our reading this morning comes from the book of Isaiah in the Hebrew Bible, and it's titled, Like a Watered Garden. If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of fingers, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness, and your gloom be like the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your needs in parched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water, whose waters never fail. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up foundations of many generations, and you shall be called repairers of the breach, the restorers of streets to live in. Here ends our reading. I'll need your help to remember this. What day was it that we found out that the cathedral in Paris, Notre Dame, caught fire? Does anyone remember the day? Does anyone remember the day that Notre Dame caught fire? Was it Thursday? Well, the day doesn't matter. The day doesn't matter. On that day, whatever day it was, I was on my phone. And I was scrolling, as I often do, on my phone through Instagram. Now, my Instagram is populated with architectural pages, pictures of neoclassical houses, dogs that I might want to adopt, Irish setters, deer hounds, and Scottish terriers. It's populated with English fashion tweed. I like tweed. And as I was scrolling through these very pleasant images, I've created a real world for myself on Instagram. One of the images gave me pause, and that was the image of Notre Dame de Paris and its roof on fire, an image that many of us saw and kept seeing for days and days after the fact. Now, when I saw this image, I thought, oh, that can't be. Is this like a joke? Is it one of those things where someone has kind of altered the image to look one way? So I remember writing as a comment on my Instagram, what is this? And then only later did I hear that this is a thing that had actually happened, that this sacred monument was on fire and that the entire world was watching and that the entire world felt a sense of loss. And I thought that the image of Notre Dame with its roof on fire had deep symbolic import. I think that there is a way that that particular image captures a feeling and a sentiment that many people have about the state of the world today. Now, I could be wrong about that. But I know that that's certainly true for myself. There's something very emblematic about a cathedral on fire and what seems to be a world on fire at times. And it is within that context that I deliver this message. It is within that context that I invite us all to remember that despite the ruins that we might see among us, despite the destruction that we might see, that we are all workers, much as the stonecutter was a worker. And the work that we are doing is a multi-generational project. And the work that we are doing is not ours to complete alone, but we must all do our part, whatever that part is, and we must do it earnestly. We must do it earnestly. So how did I come to be here? I'm very grateful to Reverend Cindy for inviting me to come and fill the pulpit today, as I understand most of your congregation is at Ferry Beach having a good time but missing the rare opportunity it is to be together with us and to meet me. So that's their loss, and that's something you have on them. So Cindy and I are part of a ministers cluster group that often meets. We haven't met here yet, I don't think. We have been meeting in Hudson, Marlboro. Now, the cluster of ministers includes myself, the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Society of Grafton and Upton, which is maybe 20 miles that way. It includes the church in Westboro, the church in Northboro, the church in Berlin, and this congregation. And we get together once a month to commiserate with each other, to share our stories, to support one another, and to also share great ideas and great practices. I'm very grateful to be in a place where we have so many Unitarian Universalist congregations so close together. It's a beautiful thing that each town has a building that looks very similar to this, with the clear glass windows, with the white painted clapboard, usually on the common. Each of these places serving as a kind of sanctuary to all those who might call themselves lovers of beauty, to those who might call themselves free thinkers or heretics, atheists, Christians, agnostics, pagans, and naturalists. It is amazing that we have these places that can be a site of welcome for Buddhists and for Hindus and for Jews and for interfaith families and for Muslims. I'm glad that in New England, at least, we have these interconnected oases, each one guided by the seven principles of our Unitarian Universalist tradition, each one reminding their congregants, reminding their friends to hope for a brighter future. Each of these places, an outpost in an anxious and an angry world that seems to be on fire at times. Again and again, I am reminded of the importance of houses of worship. I'm reminded that these places, these churches, these synagogues, these mosques, these ashrams, are places where people connect again and again with the holy and with the divine. And wherever two or three are gathered up to lift up the shared experience of humanity, to hear from each other the way that we heard from each other just earlier, to consider our place in the cosmos with its trials, with its tests, with the triumphs of the human spirit. There, too, is the holy presence. There, too, is what some call God. There is a power in our coming together. And I want us to remember that. I can't say it enough. There is a power in us coming together. And if this were not the case, there would not be so many people who are hell-bent on disrupting worship, on making people afraid to come together in these churches and these mosques and these synagogues and other houses of worship. I am a big brother through the Big Brother, Big Sister program of Central Massachusetts. And my little brother and I were driving to my place to work on a craft project. And he had begun to tell me about how he had done an Alice drill in his school. And I thought, Alice drill. And he began to explain. He was like, oh, yeah, this is the thing that we do in case someone tries to break into the school to do us some harm. And then it clicked. Oh, I know Alice. The police chief in our town came to our church to instruct us in what to do. And he used the acronym Alice. And I thought, why is it that we live in a world where we have to know about Alice, where we have to know about alert and leave and evacuate and all of the things that the acronym captures. All of these things would make it all too easy for us to say, you know what, I'm just not going to deal with it. I'm just going to unplug in whatever way that means for me. But we must continue to show up. We must continue to show up, not just for ourselves. We must continue to show up because what we are doing is work. And it is part of a multi-generational and evolutionary process. Now, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, in his iconic I Have a Dream speech, delivered before throngs of people at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, said, echoing the words of a Hebrew prophet, that I have seen the promised land, although I may not get there with you. I've seen the promised land, but I may not get there with you. Now, it is true that in some respects, perhaps all respects, Dr. King did not get to see the promised land, this land of racial and economic justice and equality, but neither did anyone else. And it might be the case that no one in this room today will see it either, but more on that later. Before coming here today, I knew that I was going to talk about ruins and the restoration of ruins. And that's because my life has been driven by two fascinations. One of the fascinations has to do with why I came to New England from New York in the first place. And that's because I love things that are historic. And I was inspired by the lure of a place that takes its history very seriously, that knows that it's an old place and celebrates that. And my other fascination is also my spiritual challenge, and that is how to be present in the moment. Oftentimes, I too want to go off to an idealized version of the past or some kind of imagined ideal in the future. But the spiritual challenge for myself and for all of us is to remain present in the here and now. Now, mindfulness meditation helps me in some respects, but I still have a long way to go, and I imagine that many of us do too. I knew that I was going to read from the book of Isaiah, one, because it's such an amazing book of inspiration, one of my favorites in the Hebrew prophets. And I think it's important that as Unitarian Universalists that we remain connected to our Jewish and Christian roots as a faith tradition, and to understand how we came to occupy these beautiful historic meeting houses that look and sound so much like churches. And I want us to remember that our religion, Unitarian Universalism, is itself part of an evolutionary process. Again, we know our roots, and we know that we are growing and that we are expanding and that we embrace the insights of science and the arts and our own intuition, our own perception of good in the world. Now let's go back to our reading. So in the reading, we heard words of consolation and words of desolation. We are in ruins. That's where the reading locates us. But even there, we hear about the restoration of ruins. We hear that the streets will be restored. We hear that the gardens will be restored. We hear that we ourselves will become like a watered garden, like a spring whose source never runs out. And I wonder what would make that possible. It's hard to believe that any of that is possible, again, when we look at the world. It's hard to be present in moments of chaos, the moments that we find ourselves in today, but that is what we are called to do. That is our spiritual challenge. Just yesterday at my congregation, we had a community seder. We gathered together, we lit the candles to start the festival. We read our Haggadah. But even there, many people, including myself, thought about the people who were doing that very same thing in California and how things ended so differently for them on that very same day. It's hard to be present when we look at the state of the world, but that is what we are called to do, even now, even here, to remain present and to do the work that we are called to do. What makes that possible is our ability to see the ruins that surround us as part of a cycle of destruction and regeneration. To see the news that we hear with increasing frequency, to hear that too as part of a building process, as part of a generative process. If we might do that, I think that we could be more fully present and more able to do the work that we are called to do. We are here to reimagine ruins. There is a writer, the writer Ken Untener, in his work titled Prophets of a Future Not Our Own, he says that this is what we are about, and I want us to listen very closely to these words. This is what we are about. We lay foundations that will need further development. We cannot do everything, he writes, and there is a sense of liberation in realizing that. That enables us to do something and to do it very well. It may be incomplete, it may be but a beginning, a step along the way. It might be an opportunity for the Lord's grace to enter and to do the rest. It may be that we will never see the results, he writes. But that is the difference between the master builder and the worker. We are workers, not master builders. Ministers, not messiahs. We are prophets of a future, not our own. We are prophets of a future, not our own. It is important for us to remember that. Especially now when it seems like our best efforts at creating a just and more noble world are not producing the kind of results that we would wish for, and certainly not at the pace that we would have imagined. It seems that we are fighting every day battles that many could have imagined were fought and won a long time ago. I can recall sitting in my study in Grafton, looking out onto the common, and I happened to see a pickup truck circling the common. This pickup truck, on the back, had a Confederate flag going back and forth around the common. This is in Massachusetts. I know what side of history we were on. There is a beautiful monument in downtown Boston that celebrates the soldiers of the 54th Infantry who fought in the Civil War. We won that. We won that war. But here it is today, someone circling around a New England common with the Confederate flag. I thought we had fought that battle and won it. But here we are today. Hatreds and prejudices that we imagined would have passed in succeeding generations seem to be finding a root and are flourishing among younger generations. Sometimes we can even see patterns in our own family systems, our own relationships with our parents, with our children, or within ourselves, that despite our best efforts, seem to be repeating themselves again and again and again. And that is when despair can sink in for me, and perhaps for all of us, and a sense of hopelessness. But that is when we are called to remember these words. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise the foundations of many generations. You shall be called repairers of the breach, restorers of streets to live in. Our consolation in the midst of all of this, even now, is in the knowledge that we are still workers repairing this world of ours, and that this work is not ours to do alone. Each person is part of a contract and a covenant across generations to do better. Each person building this new thing, this new colossus, this new big thing that we are making. We are doing this together. This is shared labor, shared work. Whatever the case may be, we are becoming something new. And the crises of our age are bringing us together in ways that were not possible before now, and perhaps It's the crises that are bringing us together themselves. They say that strange bedfellows are made during difficult times. I encourage us as Unitarian Universalists to remember that our work is inspired by our principles. And our seventh principle is the one that I think applies most to this moment in time. Ours is a web of life that we are all connected in, an interdependent web. So the work is not ours to do together, ours to do alone. It is ours to do together. And we must imagine that work happening across generations. And now is our moment to do our work. We are workers, not master builders. It's okay that we can't see fully into the future. It's okay that we cannot see the answers to solve all of life's problems today. We must imagine ourselves at a construction site where none of us are managers, none of us are architects, none of us are engineers, none of us are surveyors. All of us are day laborers, laboring but for a day, with minimal supervision, doing our work, intuitively and hopefully lovingly cutting stones, laying down planks, establishing foundations that others might come after us to build upon. All of us doing the hard, back-breaking, sweaty, and unglamorous work of living today and doing our very best. Some might see us at this work. Some might see us in this house of worship and say, you know what, you should just give up hope now. Whatever you're trying to accomplish cannot be done. Others might say that we should leave the site in despair, that this project is futile, that these parts that we wish to play in beloved community, this rehearsing that we do when we come to worship, is hopeless. But we might say that despite the hard work, we are building something greater. We are building the foundations. We are rebuilding the ancient ruins. We are repairers of the breach. We are prophets of a future that we cannot see. So let us remember this as we go. The work is hard, but it is ours to do, in whatever big, but mostly in whatever small ways we can, to build beloved community through our loving and careful actions, and most of all, through showing up with hope. Blessed be, and amen. To inspire us in this work, I invite us to rise in body or in spirit. We will sing our closing hymn, number 121, Wheel, Build a Land, number 121.
Baptist.
My friends, whatever it is we believe we can do or dream we can do, we can begin it this day. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it, so let us be bold in our living and in our loving, bold in our giving and in our forgiving, so that the world awaited becomes more nearly the world attained. Go in peace and be a blessing.